Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. You can find him at globalanalytics.biz. We'll also be joined by Nutrien Ag Solutions' Eric Snodgrass. He'll help us take a look at the weather forecast, and USDA released a cattle on feed report at 2 o'clock this afternoon. We'll go through those numbers too, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, in Chicago today, March corn finished down 6.5 cents. The settlement price at 3.87 and a quarter. The May at 3.92 and three quarters, 5 3/4 lower. In July, settled $3.97 and three quarters, down 5.5 cents. December, 3.98 and a quarter, a nickel lower. Next year's March down 5 1/4 at 4.07 and three quarters. March soybeans 7.5 lower at 9.02. The May at 9.15 and three quarters, down 7.5. And July 7.5 lower. Settlement price there at 9.29 1/2. November 9.38 and three quarters, down 8.5 cents. The bean oil 46 cents lower at 32.02. The bean meal for the day down 60 cents at 2.98.30. Wheat futures finished the July down 5 3/4 at 573 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures, February contract up 17.5 at 124.85. Feeders in the January at 141.85, down 92.5. And lean hogs, $1.27.5 lower at 67.22.5. The crude oil, $1.38 lower per barrel. Ethanol futures, 2 1/10 cents lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel down a nickel and 8 cents. And gasoline off about 5 cents for the day. Natural gas, 2 9/10 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 200 points lower or thereabouts. U.S. dollar up 0.166. And the gold futures up around $5.60 for the day. Now joining us to take a look at what's happened in Chicago, and to go through some of the cattle on feed numbers, is Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be with you, Todd.
Well, I want to hear a little bit about the cattle on feed numbers. Did you get a chance to take a look at them?
I did, and I was really pleased from the placements perspective because I think the cattle trade, obviously the coronavirus is disrupting trade all over the place as far as demand fears, but I think there's also some supply fears with this cattle on feed coming in. December placements were as high as 106.5%. I would have been surprised to get up that high given that we don't have the cheap corn that we had last year at this time in the cash corn market around the country. And indeed, we came in a little bit underneath the average at 103%. So I felt like that was actually a supportive price or supportive number for the price for feeders. On feed, January 1 came in at 102%, right with the average trade guess. Marketing's at 105%, right with the trade guess. So the fact that we came in right with the averages, I think that's actually a bit price supportive on its face. Now we got to wait to see if the coronavirus keeps beating up the commodity sector as a whole.
Speaking of the commodity sector, I take it that's what happened with the soybeans today. And did it spill over into the rest of them?
Yeah, the way I saw it after the holiday, and this is interesting because we made a, and you and I talked about this, I think late last week, about how the wheat was starting to turn it on. And Tuesday, we come back from the holiday trade and we make a 1.5+ year high in soft red wheat. So as the coronavirus took its role up the chain and became more important to the market through the currencies, I think especially, we saw it start to take hold, especially in the energy markets. Then it worked its way over into the soybeans, then the meats, and I think then the wheat. And then finally today, I think the corn was the one that took it on the chin the most because of it.
All right. So tell me about yesterday's day up in the corn, today's day down in the corn, and what that might mean for next week, if anything.
Well, yesterday's day up in the corn, I think, was a precursor to the very strong weekly export sales and the fact that we're getting some really neat export sales out of countries like Guatemala. And you've got to wonder why we're getting that as they're right in the central part of the Central America, and why we're not seeing Brazil get more business or Mexico or someone else come in there. Mexico's got its drought. It's actually going to need more corn than it normally does. Brazil's price has gone up about $20 a ton since the first of the year, and it's now $20 a ton more than ours. It's running around $200 a ton, whereas we're still stuck around the 180 area. So I think it's really important to keep an eye on that Brazilian corn price, because if it continues to go up, it will continue to suggest in the cash market they don't have the supplies for the export market, and they're not going to have the supplies for the export market probably till May, especially given the ag attaché this week cutting his forecast down to where I'm at for corn production, right about 48 million tons.
What did this morning's export numbers look like?
I thought they came in like they needed to, except for the pork market. The trade doesn't like the hog exports because the sales aren't showing up China, but the actual exports of over 44,000 metric tons, China was the number one buyer by far. And so I'm actually going to get on the horn with USDA here Monday, try and find out whether this is a Smithfield issue, because they're owned by China. If we're not getting the sales reported, but we're actually getting the shipments out the door. But other than that, we had a marketing year high in soy meal. That's a big leader, I think, next week, potentially, Todd, because we don't have a great weather forecast for South America, like the trades may be starting to think they did. I think they put the corn in the bean market kind of to bed in South America, and I think they really overstepped it on the corn. But even the beans, I think you've gotten issues with some weather areas in Brazil and especially in Argentina. So if the meal finds a supportive mindset, then I think it can help the meal along with the help the beans along with the corn.
Wait, so are you thinking corn might have a pretty decent week next week? And I don't know what decent would entail at this point.
No, I think that's a really good way to categorize it. The way I look at it is the World Health Organization has not given the label of an emergency yet for the coronavirus. If we don't see any worse, if we don't see any more buildup as far as worsening, I think that person getting in Chicago, I thought it made helped to make new lows in Chicago on Friday, just that one thing alone. But if we see the World Health Organization maintain the coronavirus, maybe takes a more of a backseat, the dollar stops going up against the Chinese currency, then yeah, I think the fundamental factors, the supply-demand factors, are there for the corn and to a lesser degree the meal to find some support.
Support to what kind of levels, to the upside?
We saw very clearly again this week, 392 is major resistance. I told clients all week long, if I could get a 395 close above, I think we'd have a fairly easy pathway to the 405, 410 March corn price. And then that would get us probably closer to the 418, 420 area in December. So these are some early targets that I'd be looking at. We can't throw away the fact that we saw an ethanol build this week, and it's really getting big in terms of supplies, but we've got livestock and I think exports countering that.
What else are you telling your clientele about? Anything on the macroeconomic side?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me is we've got these black swan things coming in more and more, and it kind of shows you how interlinked this market is. And so we're starting to see, though, that the currencies really are kind of the canary in the coal mine. And I think that's really where the Chinese currency really got hit bad. I didn't like the fact that the S&P people came out and said this coronavirus could take 1.2% off China's GDP. That puts you below 5%. That kind of equals mass unemployment and really hurts your domestic consumption. I think that's what we're going to have to tangle with if it gets worse and worse over there.
Is this just because they'll keep trying to hold it in place and economic activity will grind to a halt in those areas? And none of their areas are particularly small. They're just filled with a lot of people.
Yes, I think that, and I think we underestimate the size of and the scope of the Lunar New Year. The whole country essentially shuts down for 3 weeks, and that is their major consuming time period. And so you get that as a negative feature that could spill over into the rest of the year, just because they don't have a very good feeling about consuming the rest of the year. And, you know, unlike the SARS virus back in 2002, consumption domestically is almost 50% now, whereas back then it was, I think, less than 40. So domestic consumption information is a lot more important, kind of like what we deal with here.
What have your clientele been telling you about being able to move grain and the condition of particularly corn in their bins?
Yeah, I think quality is starting to become an issue in some areas. As far as transportation, the weather's actually worked in their favor. Illinois clients were moving pretty good this week in the Bloomington area especially. So I think you're getting corn to the market, and that's especially nice to see given that the basis is starting to pop in some areas.
Yeah. And did the New Orleans basis jump today?
It did. And Cincinnati is back over $4 a bushel. So it's up near a 3-month high again.
Do we know why?
Well, I think it's the demand side. I think you're going to have a situation, I think, where the export market really does come into play as long as that dollar stays contained and the end users believe that the supplies are going down. One thing the end users know better than any of us is they know that the Northern Plains corn crop is locked out. And so they've got to contend with that the rest of the year.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
I appreciate you.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. Check us out online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not longer after it airs on our radio stations, and in the case of Commodity Week, before it ever airs on our radio station. Again, the address, willag.org. You can just play any of our programming right out of that pager. Of course, look us up as a podcast in Google Play, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, and even Spotify. Let's check now the weather forecast on this Friday with Nutrien Ag Solutions, Eric Snodgrass. Eric, thanks for being with us. Let's get started right away here. We've had some interesting weather over the last, oh, I don't know, well, for the whole winter, maybe for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
However, I'm wondering what you think about the near-term history here, and if that means anything in the future for us.
Yeah. So if we think about what we've just gotten, I want everyone to think about how much water is in the soil right now. So in the Northern Plains, locked underneath some snow, locked underneath several inches of frozen topsoil, there's 4 to 6 inches of excess water there. Come down the Mississippi watershed, get into Illinois. We have in general 2 to 4 inches of excess water in the soil. And remember, in the last 2 weeks, we've received across much of parts of Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana, getting even into Michigan and southern Wisconsin, anywhere between 300 and 600% of average precipitation. Now, we had this slow-moving system that's still plaguing us today, and yeah, it could still wrap around and give us a little bit more snow showers or this kind of gunk we've been having. And the whole state has been just one giant transition zone between rain, freezing rain, sleet, and snow with this system. But the question is what got us here? Does that slow down? So yeah, when you ask me how interesting things have been, I'm already starting to be thinking about if this moisture is in place through the rest of February, then getting into March and early April, we are going to be kind of set up, if you will, to having more spring flooding problems just because of the excess that's here now. So yep, it's interesting to say the least.
Hey, so I want to ask you about something you and I don't use as a term very often when we have our discussions, but that I see all the time, you know, in weather forecasts. We oftentimes will talk about troughs and such, but the jet stream is really important in this process. How does it play out for us?
Well, right now it's set up in a pretty unique position. And honestly, I think back to all my years forecasting and I can't remember a time I've seen it do this. And this is what's amazing. So take yourself right now to the Ivory Coast of Africa. So this is, you know, the west coast of Africa. The jet stream actually begins there, goes across Africa, over to India, through China, out of Japan, all the way across the Pacific and ends. This is one long continuous branch of the jet stream, unbroken. It ends in the Pacific Northwest. It then restarts in Southern California and then races off to Europe. We have two pieces to it, and one of them is so elongated right now because globally the winds are quite high. We often measure how fast the atmosphere moves compared to the way the Earth rotates, and right now the atmosphere is cranked up, which gives us these long jet streams across the planet. So while that's in place, we're going to have a difficult time getting really sustained cold air. Now I'm talking about the next 10 to maybe even 15 days, getting cold air to really come in and stay into the Midwest. So we just keep this pattern going. And what it's doing is it's absolutely soaking the Northwest. It's missing California. Everything comes together near Texas, and the eastern third of the United States is going to be very wet. So the central U.S. isn't going to see these big systems coming out like it has been. We in Illinois are going to be right on the border, where east of us will be wet, west of us will be dry, and we'll be stuck right in the middle of this. So I'm hoping for Illinois farmers that we can keep the really wet stuff east of us. Looks as though that's going to be the case as we press out, you know, not only in the next 10 days, but possibly into February as well.
So am I thinking about this right, that it's really flat and narrow? And if I think about what happens with anything, water, wind, whatever, when you make it narrow and straight, it goes fast. So there's no deflection until it hits the mountains, I guess. And
yeah.
Then it breaks apart. Is that right?
You've got it. And what's interesting is where it breaks apart, just like you said, here on the West Coast of the United States, it's all about where it comes back together. And last spring, what happened was it split apart out in the Gulf of Alaska. So it came together over California and then raced to Maine, and we were caught in the crosshairs. Right now, it's a little bit farther east of there. So this is why I'm hoping that we do get over to a little bit of a drier pattern. And to be honest with you, I know that a lot of folks maybe get sick of winter about right now. We actually do need it to get really cold. But at the next 10 days, I don't see, maybe even beyond that, I don't see a shot at us getting some sustained cold air in place around here.
All right. And farmers would like it to get cold so they don't get the roads posted as well. They'll need to move some grain, and that's going to be a problem if it stays warm. Argentina and Brazil. What's the difference between, for instance, central Brazil and Argentina as it relates to weather?
So right now, let's go south first. I'm going to talk about Argentina. Okay, they have had decent rain so far this year, and you get some crop reports out of the area that say things look pretty good. Now, their yields do not look as good as they did a year ago, but remember, I'm comparing it to last year, which was their best yielding year. So what we're concerned about is the crop in Argentina, the full season stuff, still needs another, call it month and a half to finish. So if they go dry now, this is a critical time period. And here's what we're seeing. Over the next 10 days, one chance at getting some precipitation. That's all the models are advertising. So if they go dry, that could be something that could be a market story moving forward. Because up until this point, no major disaster coming out of Argentina. Now go north of there. Let's get pretty far north. Let's go up to Mato Grosso in Brazil's eastern growing regions. That area has been and will continue to be wet over the next 10 days. They want to harvest that first crop of soybeans quickly, and if it stays wet, it's going to slow that down. Now, if it continues to slow down with too much rainfall, that could push the planting of the safrinha crop back even farther. And the farther that gets planted back in the timeline here, the less of a chance that that safrinha crop has at being a major success. And you know right now what's going on in Brazil in terms of their domestic corn supply, what their domestic corn prices look like. They want to go after a big safrinha crop. And Mother Nature right now is stepping in the way of that a little bit. So we need to keep a very close eye on both regions, dry south, wet north. If it stays that way through February, that would be very supportive for U.S. farmers, but it could be a problem for those Brazilian farmers.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. He joined us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can play most of our programming right off our website at willag.org, willag.org, or look us up as a podcast in one of your favorite podcast applications, including Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, SoundCloud, Stitcher, NPR One, even Spotify. You have a great weekend. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.